If I want to be with you, I gotta live. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, in honor of Keith David receiving his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, I am here today to review 1997's Vanishing Point. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time, though given the plot of this movie, it may more accurately be high-speeding action in 30 minutes or less, because this movie is nothing but car chases, folks. I'm really skirting the line when it comes to the whole martial art pop culture. There's like one back alley fight scene that's very brief in this movie. Otherwise, it is a lot of sweet car chases, and hey, car chases are a pretty regular part of action movies anyway. But to get back to the point here, today we're celebrating the fact that Keith David received his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. This is the year that I learned that apparently this isn't like a one-day event. I had always thought that like it's one day a year when everybody gets their star and we move on. But apparently this is just like done at different points throughout the year. Michelle Yeoh received hers back in February, I believe. And now Keith David here at the back at the beginning of June received his. Chances are, if you don't know who Keith David is, there's a really good chance you would recognize his face or his voice. Keith David has been in film and television for decades now, and has really built a career being a supporting actor. He's usually cast alongside other people. Some of his more well-known roles include being in John Carpenter's The Thing and They Live. He was in Jordan Peele's Nope. In television, he was in the final season of Community, unless you were one of those wusses who didn't last to the very end of the series. You didn't know that, you wussies. You had to go through the whole thing, whether they were actually in school still or not, folks. He was also in the short-lived NBC television series The Cape. But one of the big reasons why it is exciting that Keith David got his star, not just because he's a beloved actor and really good at his job, but he is one of the first major voice actors to receive this recognition. And a lot of people are seeing this as the first stepping stone towards people who have primarily built their whole careers around doing voice work. You would most likely know Keith David for being Goliath in Disney's Gargoyles and also being the voice of Spawn in the HBO series Todd McFarlane's Spawn. So there's a lot of excitement, especially among the cringy millennials, of which I am one, that this is going to be the first step towards recognizing other people who, you know, like Jim Cummings or Roger L. Jackson, who has like built their entire career around voice work, and finally just giving them the recognition that they deserve for it, because I think it really has been the millennials that have pushed the importance and the marketability of voice work. We love our cartoons and we love the people who did voices in the thousands of cartoons that we grew up watching. I love going back and watching 90s cartoons now, whether it was ones I grew up on or ones that I never watched, and go, oh, hey, it's Billy West. Oh, hey, it's, you know, just like, it's like this constant, like, what's his one name? I always butcher it. Maurice, you know, the guy from Pinky and the Brain, like being able to pick up on these voices over and over and over again. So, with that in mind, and just myself also being a big fan of Keith David, I wanted to find a movie to review here on the show. I did not have enough time to sit down and binge all of Gargoyles, but I guess if that is something you want, let me know in the comments. I can make my way through that. Fun fact, I've never seen Gargoyles. I know about it, and I kind of wanted to watch it, but I was not allowed to. I was a very small child when that show was on, so I was not allowed to watch Gargoyles. I feel like either I would really love it now, or like a certain other mutant related 90s cartoon, I'll be like, yeah, if you grew up on it, it's great. Otherwise, it's okay. But I was going through Keith David's filmography to try and find a massive library, by the way, trying to find a movie to review here on the show. Cards on the Table, I was already planning on doing an episode on They Live for spooky season, so just put a pin in that one because I love that movie, so you're going to hear about it. And my, I don't know if it's a hot take, but maybe given the fact that I'm like the martial art media guy, martial art pop culture guy, it might be a bit of a hot take of something I have to say about that movie. It's a good thing. It's a wonderful thing about that movie, but just hold on to that thought. So I'm going through his filmography and I'm like, I want to find something that fits the show, but, you know, isn't something I haven't seen. And as I'm kind of clicking through, reading different descriptions, that's when I came across Vanishing Point. I had never heard of this movie. I read about it and I was like, okay, I'm in. Because there's one very specific thing about this movie that I absolutely love. That's one of my favorite subjects to read up on. And it also has a really good cast. Now, par for the course, Keith David is not the main here. He's a supporting character. Our lead here is actually a pre-Lord of the Rings Viggo Mortensen. Yes, Viggo Mortensen is doing what we all love for him to do, traveling really, really fast while avoiding danger, all while directors just really zoom in on those gorgeous eyes of his. Gay, straight, or otherwise, I think we can all agree that Viggo Mortensen has beautiful eyes. It is okay to say that. And directors, Peter Jackson certainly knows it. And the director of this movie also certainly knows it, because there are just so many just long shots of him staring. Speaking of the director, our director here on this film is Charles Robert Karner, who had a pretty long career doing television films. This is actually one of them. This is a TV movie. It aired originally on Fox in January of 1997, and there's going to be a bit of irony to the fact that this movie originally aired on Fox. As we get into the review, you'll see that there was no chance that Fox would run this movie nowadays. But Karner, along with directing several television films, also did write a few theatrical releases as well, including Blind Fury, a movie set in the 80s about a blind samurai. Yes, please, give me more. Also, why are there so many samurai movies about a disabled samurai? I don't know why there are so many of them, but I'm glad that there is representation somewhere. He also wrote the cult classic film Gymkata, which is a, if you don't know, this is a movie that mixes gymnastics and martial arts together for the combat. You know, like the thing I teach children at the YMCA, this is like the forerunner to the thing I do for a living now. As I said, this is a TV movie, but it's actually a remake of a theatrical film. In the early 1970s, a movie also called Vanishing Point came out. At its very baseline story, these two movies are similar. There's a big split that these movies go down, but I haven't seen the original Vanishing Point. I was reading about it to help me prepare and kind of see the differences with the remake here. But I will say, though, they are two very different films in the direction the story goes. What the original movie was about also really interests me. And by the time I finished this movie, I was like, okay, I would really like to go back and check out the original. Spoiler, getting ahead of myself here, I really enjoyed this movie. At its core, this movie is about a guy named Kalowski, who his job is he works at like a auto repair shop that works on muscle cars. And his job is that once the cars are rebuilt, worked on, whatever, he is to then drive the car to its owner. That is what he does for a living now. And he's driving all up and down the American West. So I think it's in Idaho is where this is all centrally located, but he's down in New Mexico, Utah, Colorado, all up and down and around in that area. And his latest delivery is a 1971 white Dodge Challenger, which is actually the same make and model car for both movies. A little nod to the original that the remake had. It is at this point that the movies split in two different directions. The original is a very existential meaning of life, purpose, totally fueled by drugs. There's a lot of drugs in this movie, apparently. That's not what the remake here from 97 is about. Instead, while Kalowski is out on his current delivery, he's like the furthest away possible he could be from home. Again, Idaho, he's like down, I think it's New Mexico. When he checks in on his wife, who has had kind of a rough pregnancy, and when he checks in, he finds out that she has been rushed to the hospital, is going to be rushed into surgery, and that her life and the life of the baby are at risk. And so he is going to do what any concerned father is going to do. He's going to take that muscle car and drive as quickly as possible back to her so he can be by her side during this event. However, he's like 2 minutes down the road going 100 miles per hour when he's pulled over by a couple cops who give him a light dose of police brutality, only for him to get back in his car and run from the law. And the rest of the movie is him racing as fast as he can across state lines with all these different state police officers after him. And all he wants to do is get back to his wife, who her and their child may be dying. But things continue to escalate because not only is every police force between New Mexico and Idaho now rallying to stop him, the FBI are going to get involved. Enter our focus of today's episode, Keith David. Technically the bad guy from the movie. So Keith David is the head of the local branch of the FBI division out there, and they're starting to get some information in about Kalowski's background and who he is. And this is where the movie takes a very interesting turn that made me go, oh yeah, this is good stuff. So Keith David's character makes the assumption, based off of what little information that they know about him, that Kalowski must be running guns to then, the year is 1997, commit an act of terrorism like the Oklahoma City bombing. And so the FBI needs to save face for the American government since they are living in a post-Ruby Ridge and Waco world. Now, if you've never listened to my sister show, My Seminary Life, you're about ready to learn something about me. If you do listen to that show, you know exactly where this is headed. I love learning about cults and new religious movements. And the fact that this movie is a work of historical fiction, I think that's where this could be categorized as, historical fiction. But using that early on, 1997, that's like 2 years after Oklahoma City, using the Oklahoma City bombing, Ruby Ridge, and Waco as a backdrop for this film is wildly fascinating. And this is why Fox would never run this movie now, is because basically one of the main things about this movie is that it is anti-government and anti-authoritarianism. This movie is about the corrupt American government coming up with their own narratives and forcing it on the American people. Even in light of the actual information coming forward, they all find out, the police forces and the FBI all find out, that he's just a guy going over the speed limit to get back to his dying wife. But they are willing to risk his life and property damage and inconvenience everyone to save face for the good old US of A. And this is the rallying message of The Voice. So in both films, there is a DJ, a local radio DJ, who picks up on the story and then starts to communicate the actual message of what's really going on. And in this version of the film, that DJ is a guy named The Voice, played by Jason Priestley of Beverly Hills 90210 fame. When he's first introduced, they only show him from the back, and I was really hoping they would keep the mystery alive of just like only ever showing him from the back, or like kind of an angle or in the shadows or something, just to kind of play up the whole like DJ thing. Eventually, and for the bulk of the film, you do see Jason Priestley. And honestly, it actually is for the best, because he does have a great mustache. He's got a great mustache for this movie. But his whole role here in the film is that he is a technically like alt-right libertarian DJ in the American West, who's, you know, speaking to the American citizens, the real citizens. I can't do that radio voice, you know, the like Dr. Death Defying in True Lies of the Fabulous Killjoys. Listen up. The future is bulletproof and the aftermath is secondary. It's time to do it loud and do it proud. Killjoys, make some noise. I have to like really focus if I'm going to do that, like, gonna punctuate everything I say and then carry on in a different way kind of radio DJ voice. Should I start podcasting that way? Let me know. Drop in the comments. Let me know. Should I start talking, listeners, American citizens, Dojoians? Should I be talking like this when I do my podcasts? So again, while the American government is saying that Kalowski is a white supremacist militia member from Idaho, which is a real thing that can be that could describe actual people, he's actually just a guy trying to get back to his wife. And this actually gets to the wild part of like the deeper meaning of this film, because yes, it's very much like the American government is lying to you and overreaches their powers, which they do. But at its core, similar to the original, but in a different way, it does wrestle with one of life's biggest questions. And that is, why do bad things happen to good people? Because as we see, is particularly in flashbacks, but also within the main premise of this movie, Kalowski is just a guy. But he had a rough life growing up. He had a rough time post-military. Didn't really want to live anymore. And now he's in this place where, like, his wife and child may be dying, and the American government is literally trying to kill him. All because he's just a guy. And what's crazy about this, you know, coming from a guy who has, like, theological training background, is that when that question comes up, is why do bad things happen to good people, this then turns into like trying to defend the goodness of God and logical argumentation and blah blah blah. But instead, what this movie doesn't give a rip about that. Instead, what this movie shows is that in the midst of it, in the midst of bad things happening to good people, what those people need is faith, hope, and a community. That's what sustains Viggo Mortensen throughout this movie. In a flashback, we see that his wife was a devout Catholic woman. And that was like an expectation, is that, okay, if we're going to get married, you got to join the church. And so he gets baptized into the church. And at different points while he's driving to the hospital, we see him crossing himself. He's like, you know, trying to find out if people he's, you know, some of the cops he's ran off the road, if they're safe. He doesn't want anyone to get hurt. At one point, he does get refuge at a Native American reservation, and they take him in because the government is saying, you're a bad guy, and so I will call you my friend. And they talk about spirituality and, like, do you believe in anything? And he says, you know, I'm working on it. Like, I'm trying to figure that out. At one point, he's living, or he's not living, but he, like, gets some help from people who are living off the grid to avoid paying taxes. And with them and with the Native Americans, both of them are the people who, like, embrace him in this, like, chaotic time. And that sees it, that pays off for him in the end. I don't want to spoil the ending of this movie because I really think you should go check it out. But just to kind of give you a heads up of where this is going, the story ends on Easter. Like, this movie is very religious without it being like a cheesy 90s Christian film. Like, it is a very religious movie about why does bad things happen to good people, and just like when you're in the midst of that, the need for faith, the need for hope that things could work out, and the importance of having people around you who actually believe you and want to be a part of, actually support you through what you are going through, rather than trying to defend the goodness of God or trying to, like, you know, Bible verse their way through, you know, everything's fine, don't worry about it, don't question anything. Yeah, you know, but instead just like, yeah, you need people. You need people in your life, people who will support you. You need to have something to have faith in. You need to have something to hope for. And I'm sorry, but just the hope of things will get better when you go to heaven just isn't enough. That's too far forward. I need something like right now. You know, I need something like down the road. And for him, it was the hope that he could get back to his wife and child and be by their side. I've watched a lot of be forgotten films for the show already, and I've enjoyed them, but they're not really anything special. This is one of the this might be the first time that I will say to you, this is a hidden gem. I really enjoyed this movie. The cast, as you can tell, is quite good. The music was great because the DJ is like an alternative radio station dude. He's playing like indie 90s rock, which is great. The main theme sounds a lot, the main theme for the movie sounds a lot like Fairy Tale Story from The Princess Bride. Like, the acting is great. The music is very good. The story is shockingly deep and goes in various directions. Is it perfect? No. I got to about, it's the movie's like an hour and a half long, and I got around the hour mark and I checked where I was at and I was like, oh, we still have quite a bit to go here. Like, it was maybe a tad bit long, especially considering the fact that there would have been commercials when you were originally watching this film. So it probably was like 2 hours to get through it entirely then. So yeah, it's not perfect. And there's moments where, like, you will be reminded that it is a TV movie. The quality kind of shows here and there, but yeah, Vanishing Point is very good. And the great news for you, the good news for you, listener, is that the man isn't trying to hide this movie from you, because you could just go into the description of this episode and find a link to it on YouTube. It's for free on there. And the quality of the video is really good too. So would I watch Vanishing Point again? Duh. Yeah, I hope that's pretty obvious by this point. Would I buy a physical media copy of Vanishing Point? So here's the thing. I didn't think that would be an option, seeing how it's a TV movie. Those don't usually get releases, but somehow there is a DVD copy up on Amazon for $60. Here's the thing. Did you all hear Claire whistle in the background? Here's the thing. Vinegar Syndrome, Criterion, even Shout Factory, like, they could have movies that are that will run you that much, but they're like 4K Ultra HD remasters with a ton of bonus features, maybe multiple films. This could just be a bootleg copy that somebody ripped from a VHS tape from when they recorded it on their TV, for all I know. Maybe it's a legit release and, you know, it had a limited release and so scarcity and all that. But I look, if Vinegar Syndrome puts out a remaster of it, maybe, but I'm not taking a chance on just some random thing I saw on Amazon. By the way, Vinegar Syndrome, get on with it when it comes to Gymkhana. That movie is too hard to find. Well, that's it for today's episode. So congratulations again to Keith David. Much deserved. And thank you for all your work you've done in the film and television industry. And thank you, listeners. Thank you, citizens, for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend. And check out the other shows here on the Andazile Podcast Network, like Page and the Pixel, Systematic Ecology, and Friday Night Frights. You can follow the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out. And check out my YouTube channel. Check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-speeding action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.